Hello, Watch Nerds, and welcome back. I am in Helsinki, visiting friend of the podcast and talking photography. I'm saying hello and welcome to Fredrik Lindberg. Hi, Fredrik.
Hi, Nico. It's nice to be here with you.
Pleasure is all mine. I'm really happy. This is a big studio, man.
Yeah, it's 64 square meters, so it's a lot of space, but then again, it's always needed.
Let's begin with wrist and drink check. What's on your wrist and what's in your cup?
In my cup, I have Löfbergs Charisma, and on my wrist, I have my Casio Royale, my world timer. I chose to wear this one today because this week has been quite an international week for me with customers and connections to Denmark and the North America, so that's why I thought it was going to be appropriate to wear a world timer.
I am drinking the same coffee, being your guest in your studio, and I am wearing R0 from Jurmo Watches Finland, a watch that means so much to me, a watch that just represents so many firsts. One of the smallest 7750 chronographs in the world, one of the most comfortable watches I've ever worn, and it's on a beautiful, beautiful strap made by Cute Leather Works. Now, who is Fredrik Lindberg?
Yeah, well, it's me, and I'm a photographer from Helsinki, Finland. I used to work as a teacher for a long time, and then I wanted to make sure that the kids would know that when they dream to do something, they should go for it. And this was my dream for a long time. I didn't go for it, and then one day I decided this is what I'm gonna go for. If I'm gonna teach the kids that they should go for what they want to do, then I should do it myself also.
How was your wife with it? I mean, you have kids and wife, and
she was supportive,
right?
Yeah, she was supportive, but also naturally a bit hesitant because it's a huge commitment to do a thing like this, and we have small children, and basically it was gonna be that when she goes back to work, I quit my normal day job and start doing this. So it was just an exchange of things. We knew that the first month at least I'm not gonna get basically any revenue, so we were counting on that.
It takes a person to support such a step forward.
Yeah, and I'm in a lucky position. I've gotten really good support from family and friends. And it's honestly a huge, I couldn't have done it without them.
Amazing. Back to photography. How is watch photography different from any other? I mean, you do other projects as well, I understand. But watch photography is your passion. How is it different from others?
Watch photography is interesting, at least to me, because watch photography, you're talking about such a small object. And there are so many different finishes and surfaces that you need to take into account when photographing a watch. You always can get quite good results with just one picture, but many times, as we're gonna probably discuss later, you have to use multiple pictures to get truly the essence of the watch to show in one final image.
Let's begin with the basics. What should everyone who is getting into watch photography should consider?
The most important thing getting into photography, period, and especially watch photography, is you need some sort of a stand for your camera. It doesn't matter if you use a phone or a DSLR or anything. You need some place sturdy to keep your camera, because otherwise you're limiting yourself to handheld techniques, and those work fine for many things, but when you really get into trying different techniques and like loom shots and different things, then you need to have the stability so that you don't get camera shake and that ruins your picture.
With long exposure and all that.
Yeah.
Would you recommend any start kit?
Actually, I would say that the kit is, yeah, I'd say use whatever phone you have and get a good stand, maybe one cheap video light. That's basically enough to get started and learn techniques. Check on YouTube is full of instructional videos. Go check them out. You get really inspired by checking them. That's basically how I also started learning watch photography, was just watching YouTube and seeing, ah, it does it here, someone does it this way, and then I tried the technique, and then I thought, okay, how can I make it look more the way I want, and started modifying and learning how to light that way.
The obvious question, camera versus a very good phone.
It really just comes down to what you're gonna use the picture for. If you're gonna post pictures on Instagram, you can do really well with your phone. There's really no need to buy some expensive camera gear just to get along that way. But if you want to do any sort of commercial work, it's gonna be a proper camera, quote unquote, that you're gonna need, because when we get into the nitty-gritty, the dynamic range of a proper camera versus a camera phone is gonna play a huge part, because it handles gradients way much better and things like this. When usually you don't think about them, but those are things that you, when it comes to a paying customer, those are things that matter.
And color science, I guess,
Yeah,
totally different with real camera.
exactly.
Yeah, my experience with phones has been quite a bit as of late because my friends from Veikkokone Lapua allowed me to test a bunch of flagship phones. A lot of fun. And I tried the Sony Xperia Pro, I tried the S24 Ultra, the iPhone 15 Pro Max, the 14 Pro Max, and a few others. And my experience is that if you want good video, you go for iPhone. If you want a good still picture, you go for Samsung Ultra, either 23 or 24. But the color signs are never as accurate as your eye. I could never get the same result. You have to do a lot of post process with
Yeah.
all of those. And the Sony was 2,500 euros. That's basically a camera price.
That's quite a lot for a phone, yeah.
And I could not for the life of me get around the software. So I think software is quite a big thing when you choose both camera and a phone, what works for you, because both Nikon and Sony and Panasonic have different softwares.
Yeah. And mainly, I mean, most of the camera manufacturers have their own software, but when it comes to editing, then usually it's a third-party software that's basically Adobe that almost everyone uses.
Let's talk about light, because this is what photo means, light. And it's, according to most photographers, the most important ingredients in photography.
Yeah, that's true, and you can't really get around it. If it doesn't matter if you have a $100,000 camera and lens set up, if you don't have good light, you won't get a good picture, at least if you're talking about image quality. You need proper light, and that's the main thing. When you asked about what's the beginner rig, I would recommend that you start with whatever you have, but then you start learning lighting. Learn how to shape light the way you want it, and test, if I do it like this, how does it look in the picture? What if I move the light closer, how does it affect? If I move the light further, does it affect? If I put something in between, how does it affect? That's the key to learning lighting and being able to make the pictures the way you want them to look.
What are the tools that you use to work with light regarding watches and watches photography?
Regarding watches, I mainly use strobe lights for photography, but you can also use continuous LED lights like video lights. But I usually have a dome and a grid on, so I can concentrate the light in quite a shallow beam, and then I use some sort of diffusing material. I have different kinds here that I use. Everything from translume to just basically thin white paper works. And for different effects, I use different things, but that's the main setup. Sometimes when I want something else, that's the way you get most of the watch to look good, with a bit of soft light. But sometimes when you're photographing a watch that has sunburst, which is one of my favorites, you need hard light to get the sunburst to pop. So you can get good pictures of sunburst with diffused light, but basically, if you get a hard light source to hit just the dial, or then edit it later on so that you combine pictures so that you have hard light for the dial. That's a ticket for a golden picture.
And reflectors, how do they play a role in the whole light?
If you're talking about reflectors on the light, that it just basically concentrates so that the light goes in a certain direction and doesn't flutter all around. That sometimes you want light to go on a bigger surface because it fills in the shadows, but sometimes, and my style is a bit darker and moodier, so I don't really want the light to go everywhere. I want there to be shadows. So I use soft light, but I use it really at quite hard angles. So I get soft light, nice light, but I still get the shadows.
Speaking of reflection, how do you deal with mirror-like surfaces? Because we have here on a table, as you said, one of the hardest watches to photograph, and that's Sonnerr by Sweden. It's both very, very reflective. It's mirror finish surface, and it has a sunburst dial, and it's red on the top of everything, which is very hard to understand that different colors are easier than others. But let's begin with the mirror and then with the colors.
Basically, the mirror finish or any polished finish, you need some sort of diffusing material real close to make it look good. There are many ways you can do this really on the cheap, but basically what I do when I photograph it is I usually use big sheets of translume and basically try to build a set around so that I light the pieces of translume paper, and that's what reflects on the mirror parts, and that's how you get this nice gradient and clean looking image. Because if you use hard light on a reflecting surface, it's gonna look, everyone knows, if you have a reflective watch and you go outside and take a picture, you see all the small different, you see parts of the trees, you see everything. It doesn't look bad, but it doesn't really look aesthetically.
It looks like most of the pictures I'm taking.
Yeah, but that's the way it goes. I mean, you can't photograph a reflective watch outside without any diffusing material without making it look like that. It's
And
basically
saying
impossible.
diffusing, you mean from a distance that covers kind of the watch on the side or
Yeah, it
next to
could be
it?
that, or then it could be as simple as if you're photographing on a sunny day, you get hard light. If you're photographing when it's cloudy outside, you have automatic diffused light because the clouds work as a diffuser. So if you have a chrome watch or something with a chrome finish, you can go outside on a cloudy day and take
So
a
cloudy day is
picture.
better.
Cloudy day is always for photographers, that's the best thing.
And I realize this is very unique and difficult subject to discuss on a podcast format, but it's podcast what we do, and we love what you do. We have created this relationship. We have you to test watches for us and to give us feedback, and to through your expertise as a photographer, we understand also watches better. And what else is there? We have the exposure. Can we talk about the exposure a bit?
Yeah, exposure is a big part because basically that determines how light or dark your image is going to be. And when you're taking pictures and like commercial pictures of watches, you need to be really careful not to overexpose, because what happens is you lose the basically the data from the image, that all the detail is gone. And detail is really important when it comes to showing off the best part of the watches. If you have a highlight, that's basically, if we say half the bezel is white, you don't really get a sense of what it really looks like. You see it, you know it's a reflection, but you can't see what does the watch look like. And that's the important thing when you are looking at watches, especially if you want to buy one. You need to be able to see what's the texture like, how does it the texture compared to the rest of the watch, like if the bezel and the dial, how do they work together?
I almost missed the colors. Are any colors easier than others? I know that red is difficult in general, but is white, for example, easier than green or beige or?
Yeah, white is easier. All the colors you have to remember, like if you use we talked about diffusion, and I always use white diffusion, but any surface will reflect light, and it's the same like if a watch has a red dial, it will reflect red light. So that's how light works. If you see the color red, that's because the surface reflects the color red light. And that means that it will reflect red light on the inside of the watch, and sometimes that's something you need to be wary of, because it might be that especially with white dials, sometimes the dials are just a tint yellow, and you really don't see it that way when you just look at the watch, but when you photograph it, you see it reflections from the dial and see, notice that hey, these look really yellow. And that's something you need to probably manage later on, because it doesn't really represent what you see with your bare eye, but it represents what the camera sees. And sometimes you have to tweak those things to show the watch in the way it's really intended.
You know, I'm into crystals a lot. I care a lot about anti-reflective coating and crystal purity. Does anti-reflective coating that has blue or green or a violet tint disturbs the work of a photographer?
It doesn't disturb, but it's something to be wary of. If there's a blue tint and a domed crystal, that's really the worst combination.
Okay.
I've had watches like this, beautiful watches, but it's basically impossible to get a picture where it doesn't show through, and practically that means you have to sometimes do some editing later on and basically desaturate the blue parts. Just because it looks the when you use strobe lights or video lights, it accentuates it. You won't see it in when you look at the watch in person. You won't see the blue light that way. But when you hit a few hundred watts of light on a small object, you're gonna see it.
Do you have a favorite type of watch to photograph?
I like I said earlier, I really love sunburst dials, and they are because it's a challenge.
In terms of case, of course, I would guess that black PVD is easier to photograph or brushed, finished titanium.
I like brushed finishes. Those are because there's some texture to it, and it's a bit forgiving because it doesn't reflect everything around you. When you have a mirror finish on a watch, you have to be really, really careful, because it will show basically all your set, how you have positioned everything around the watch. And that can be used in your favor, or then again, it can show if you have been sloppy in some ways. So you really need to think about that.
How about macros?
I love doing macro work, but the most challenging thing about macro work is that when we're talking about centimeters from the watch, your depth of field is so narrow that you can't really you can well, when you use phones, you get quite decent macro shots, but if you want a proper macro shot, you really need a dedicated camera, a dedicated macro lens, and some software to focus stack. There's really no way around that.
Would you recommend any?
I use Helicon Focus myself. I know it's maybe not the industry standard, but it's something that many photographers use. I've seen other photographers talk about it.
What's the benefit?
The benefit is that it works really well without doing anything. There's a small learning curve, of course, because you have different types of pictures demand different types. There are three methods of doing the focus stacking, and then there are some parameters you need to change to make it the best, but you really learn those quite fast.
Would you walk me through that?
Basically, what you do is you choose your starting point, what's the closest point you want in focus, and what's the furthest point you want in focus, and when we're it's it sounds crazy, but when you talk about something as small as a watch, you might need 20 pictures or more, maybe sometimes 40 pictures, depending on your camera settings. I usually use quite a lot of light, so I can use a small aperture, which gives me as much depth of field as possible. So I don't really need 40 shots per se, but usually I get done with 15 to 20 shots. But you take the shots and you have to check incrementally. I have a small scale on my you have to focus manually, and I have a small scale so I see that I take the exact same increments when I photograph. So I know that when the software wants to stitch everything together, it has an easier time because there's no big jumps and it goes quite smoothly.
We kind of got into it. What lenses do you like? What lenses do you use?
I would say over 90% of my work is shot on one lens, and that's an 85 millimeter tilt shift lens. I happen to use Nikon. There's really no there's always talk about which camera brand is better or worse, and I started photographing with Nikon because I liked it, and there's really you won't go wrong either way you go. There are great lenses and great cameras in all the brands, but I happen to use Nikon, and I love the tilt shift lens because it also gives me the possibility to shift the focal plane. So if I want to take just one picture and the watch is the dial is slightly on an angle, I can tilt and shift the lens so that I get the focus plane to line up with the whole of the dial. So I really only need one shot to get the whole dial in focus, even though the other way, if I wouldn't have that possibility on the lens, I would have to focus stack.
Not being a photographer, I don't own any lens or a camera for that matter, which is probably bizarre for some, because I mean we have a podcast about watches, but I have tried ton of phone lens, and most of them are excuse my French, garbage. Low quality crystal, low quality plastic. They break easily. They don't stay well. The cases break very often on all those, but the ones that I have actually stuck with, and they've been a decent, and there is a caveat there, are Moment Lens and Sun Mark. And the reason that they're good is because they're really good crystal, good glass, and they're very well built. But in my opinion, everything above iPhone 14 Pro Max further needs no external lens, except the new Super Macro by Sun Mark, which I am really hoping to get soon to try, because that's the only way I can make good macros without buying a full kit camera. And for those of you that want to try a good macro lens, just take your iPhone, if you have an iPhone Pro or Pro Max, both have a good macro lens, and put on the normal photo mode, just press 2 and come 2 centimeters to the. So it's just 2-2 kind of a rule, and you will get a good macro if you have a good light.
Yeah, I think that light, like you said, light is key to a good picture. And the funny thing about when you talk about phones and photography, we talk about the camera in an iPhone. It's actually there are three or four cameras in there. There are different focal lengths, macro lenses. They're all built in, and that's like you said, the newer iPhones and up. You're really not gonna need much more than that.
Here is something I could mention about the phones. In my experience, is that the iPhone 15 Pro Max, the RAW file produce sharper image than the RAW file from the newest Ultra, the 24 Ultra. It has more information on the RAW file, and it's more accurate colors in the RAW file. That's my experience.
Yeah, that's probably down to the sensor because bit depth and the way and also the glass naturally the glass will affect because if you have a good clear cr
Oh, never thought
crystal.
about that, the glass that covers, or both glasses actually, both the lens and the glass that covers
Yeah,
the
well,
lens.
everything in between the subject and the sensor will affect the image. So
It's just the last few years we have started talking about anti-reflective coating on phone lenses.
because every piece of glass that you have in between there is gonna be affecting the image. And when a normal camera lens has something usually something between, like, I think about 7 to 15 elements. And there was at one time, like 10, 15 years ago, there was a really big war on between the different brands that this lens has such and such many coats and coated elements, because it was a big thing, because people started noticing that you really get different kinds. You can That's why sometimes when you hear people talk about, I like the colors on a Canon better than a Nikon, it's because usually the Canon would create, if I remember correctly, they used to create a bit warmer of an image, and that's usually more people find that a bit more pleasing.
So that's what it is, because there's always this Canon guy gang, and then there's the Nikon, and there's the Panasonic guys. Oh.
Yeah, but it's part of it's like
It's like with the watches.
it's like with the watches and with everything. There's always these purists that think that there's only one great one, and the other ones are garbage. But actually, there are different probably different areas that different brands excel at.
Editing and processing tools. What do you use? What do you recommend? What do you like?
Like I mentioned, for photo stacking, I use Helicon Focus. That's not something I use every time, because not all my work involves focus stacking. But my work process is that I shoot tethered to my computer. So basically, what I do is I don't use a memory card. I just photograph straight to my computer, and I get the image straight into. I use Lightroom to capture this. Many people are telling me I should be using, is it called Capture One? I think that's the industry standard for this. But I'm used to Lightroom, so that's what I use. And I get the images to Lightroom, and from there on, I choose the images I want to combine. Usually, I combine a few pictures, and then the process is I move them over to Photoshop and as different layers, and then I start my work.
Hidden techniques and tricks. Teach us something cool.
One cool thing that's really inexpensive is the so-called IKEA hack, because they have this one lampshade. I can't for the life of me I can't remember the name right now, but they have one lampshade that costs, I think it's 4 or 5 euros, or maybe 6 euros, but it's really inexpensive. It's just this white lampshade, and if you put that around your watch, and basically if you have some lights, you can shine the lights on the lampshade, and you photograph through the hole where you're supposed to connect the lampshade to your lamp. You're gonna be surprised what you see.
What do you use it for?
It's almost if you have a watch that's really reflective, that's great for it. The only problem with that is that it's quite limiting in what angles you can use, because as soon as you start tilting the watch, it's gonna the white wall, the reflective wall of the lampshade is gonna you're gonna see it in your crystal, and it's gonna make it harder to basically see what the dial looks like.
So theoretically, this is a white box in different form.
Yeah, it's basically it's like a light tent, but it's really inexpensive and easy to
Very
get.
cheap one, yeah.
It's something I recommend everyone should try at least once. I have one here in my studio
So
as well.
next week, IKEA is out of those lamps after this episode is out.
They're gonna have to order some more from the factory.
And how about ethics? How much editing before a photo becomes a lie?
It's a really good question, and I think that's something of a that's a thing that I think many people have different opinions on, and rightfully so. My own stance is that When I do work for a customer, for me it's really important to showcase the watch in the best way possible, but also in a way that it really represents the what you get. And this means you can't really alter any colors. Is that's one big thing, because if you alter the colors, then if we've all been, I think we've all been victims of it sometimes. If you've seen a product picture, you've ordered it online, you get it, and you look at the whatever it is, and you think, oh, this is not the color I saw. And there are two problems there. One is might be editing, and the other one is that you're not maybe on a your phone screen might not be calibrated, or is most likely not calibrated. You will see different colors on your phone screen than what they are in real life.
By the way, before I forget, you will post picture of that lamp
Yeah,
thing
I will post the
for the
picture of
listeners
yeah.
because this is gold.
Yeah, it's really fun and inexpensive and fun, and it's a great way to understand how you can shape light. It's a really easy way, and you just put the lampshade over and move the lights around. You can use a flashlight, you can use anything that you have at home,
That's really cool.
and just put two flashlights from different sides and make one go a bit higher up. And
I know what I'm doing today before I leave Helsinki. I'm buying a bloody lamp from
you're buying a
IKEA.
lamp and putting it over your watch.
Back to the ethics. What do you think about AI?
AI is really controversial right now, and I think it's a great tool for inspiration. We all need inspiration for our work. It's a big part of my work also, the inspiration part. I mean, I try to get myself really inspired about the product I'm photographing, because I feel that's something I should do as a photographer. If we're talking about watches, someone has spent a lot of time, effort, money on producing a new model, producing their own vision of what that watch should look like. If I, as a photographer, don't even try to match the same level of excitement of what the manufacturer has, how can I possibly do the best work of the watch as possible? It's not possible. I have to get really involved and excited about the product, and that's the way I do it, basically through getting inspired about the product, and that's the way I pull out the best work for me. But AI is a great tool, because if you have you look at the watch, you get a feeling of it could some picture like this could work, and you can prompt AI to basically give you an idea of or test the idea beforehand. If you feel it doesn't really work with AI, then you know it's not probably gonna be worth putting 2 or 3 hours in building a set and making sure every light is okay, and then noticing that okay, this doesn't really work the way I wanted. So it can be really a good tool, but and it can also be used in photography. But then, like with everything, if you are relying on work or help from someone else, you really need to credit it. So, like if you would be collaborating with someone else, you would make sure that everybody sees that this is a collaboration. When you're working with AI, you should also state that I've been using AI to create this picture.
You mentioned inspiration. Who inspires you?
I got inspired by seeing lots of beautiful work. I think I'm from Finland, Helsinki, so I think everyone who knows anything about watch photography in Finland know Hopeashot. I can honestly say he's been an inspiration for me. His work is really consistent. He's been doing it for a long time, and he has a style it's really aesthetically pleasing, and I like it. It's not the same. It's not my style. That's not what I'm trying to do, but and that's a good thing. I mean, if there's no point in he does it really great, why should I try to copy him? Everybody who wants a picture that like he does, they hire him. I want people to hire me for the way I do my work. So, but inspiration wise, there's always something you can learn from looking at other people's pictures. When you learn lighting, you learn to look at pictures in a bit of a different way. And you can see from any person, you can find a picture you like and start to wonder how did he do this or how did she do this, and then really try to think of the way and test out, and when you finally nail it, you get it, and that's also when you start to appreciate other people's work, because sometimes it might be something really simple, and sometimes it might be that you notice that okay, they have honestly really put hours and hours into making a picture looking like this.
And you do work with other photographers. There is a lovely lady here with us.
Well, this shout out to Janika Lenn.
You do different photography, both of you. She does lifestyle photography and
she does
else?
More lifestyle and fashion photography. And we also do video projects together, because video projects are a totally different thing from photography. Photography you can do quite well on your own. It's good if you have a team to help you on set, but you can do most of the things on your own. Whereas video productions, when you start doing anything a bit more, you really doing it on your own is really very difficult.
And of course, you get four eyes are more than two eyes. You get better
results naturally.
Yeah.
And the way why it works so well with Janika and me is because I'm a bit of a tech nerd, and I like the nerdy stuff, the checking the exposures and making small micro adjustments there. And Janika is really good with people and getting everything out. That's when we set up here, you notice that she's really good at saying, okay, just turn it slightly that way, turn that way. Remember to do this. She's really good at that stuff, and I wouldn't say I'm bad at it, but that's not my strongest suit. My strongest suit is probably the more technical side.
What's your favorite thing, before we wrap this up, what's your favorite thing about being a photographer of watches?
Really, the challenge is what makes it so great, because it's challenging to find a way to light your watch in a way that you really bring out the best parts of it, and in doing so and trying to look at every watch and what should I really bring forth in this watch, that's when I've really looked close at the watches I've been photographing, and it's a bad thing. Everyone who's a bit of a watch nerd knows that when you look at a watch enough, you're gonna start want to buy that watch, because there's always these small really intriguing things.
I promise this is the last question. What's your favorite watch up to date that you have photographed?
It's gonna be the Sisu from Jurma Watches, because it was actually the first, should we say, proper watch I got to photograph, and it holds a special place in my heart. I've set up a milestone for myself that when I reach a certain point in my business, I'm gonna purchase one, because it's the model that really set me down this path.
As the owner of Jurma watch, I can tell you it's like no other.
I really believe you, and I have extensive I have extensive experience of the watch. I think I haven't counted, but I think I have had 5 different models.
Wow.
At least here in my studio, and looked at them all, and they are in their own way, they are different models, and they have different looks and different vibes, but they are basically skeletonized watches are a thing that some people don't like, because it's a bit of an oddity.
Yeah.
But there's something about just seeing the mechanics. I really love it.
In such a size, to me, I'm fascinated with the size of that little thing, 3.3 centimeters or whatever. There is so much mechanics that goes into,
yeah,
and all the tolerances. Everything has to work together. Everything has to be on time. Pun intended, is a watch.
Yeah.
It's fascinating indeed. And that's the reason most of us get into the hobby, because we are fascinated by the mechanics of mechanical watch.
Yeah, naturally when it's a skeleton, it's not an automatic, but that doesn't really bother me at all, because that's also I have some automatic watches, and I have a hand wound watch, and I think actually it's really satisfying to wind it up.
That's a different relationship you build with your watch.
Yeah.
It's a silent codependency that you develop with the purely mechanical watch that automatic watch can never provide.
Yeah, because an automatic watch, especially if you use it more and it stays on your wrist, you don't really have to think about it. But
Exactly.
when you have a mechanical watch, it's okay. Usually people tend to have a system that every morning they wind it up or every evening they wind up, but it gets to the point like where like you brush your teeth but
Yeah.
and you wind your
And it
watch.
has been like that for so many years.
Yeah.
Did you miss anything? Any last words?
I think we talked about a lot of the important things, but last thing I would like to mention that if you like my work, you've seen me on Instagram, please put a DM to me and I'm more than happy to collaborate with different brands.
If
So
somebody wants to learn from you, can they buy a course from you?
I
Consultation?
you can buy consultation from me and we can grab a coffee. You can come to my studio visit. We can talk photography. We can do test shoots together. We can arrange for anything. If you're an aspiring photographer and you want to try out and you don't have the space, contact me. I'll make sure you come here to my studio and do something together and you'll learn something.
Fedik, thank you so much for your time. We will talk about videography very soon. And until next time, for the listeners, if you have any questions, recommendations, if you just want to chat with me and Fredrik, again, all the necessary contacts will be in the podcast notes. And until next time, remember, it was Beyond Horology, it's time, and people respecting both. Goodbye.
Thank you.